You have the gift of a wizard. Who are you?
I am your worst nightmare. I am a thinking man who can't be deluded by your lies any more than I can be burned by your foul magic. Brother Narev tried to smash his foot down on Richard's face, but Richard was able to deflect the blow. He seized Narev's ankle. The man caught his balance and pulled madly to get free. The effort of holding on felt as if it ripped the wound through Richard's insides. He tried to hold on, but his fingers slipped from the wet leather. Once free and out of Richard's reach, Narev bent and seized the hilt of the sword lodged in the sister's back. He tugged, but it didn't come completely out. He growled in fury, his boots slipping on the slimy floor as he yanked on the sword. Richard knew that once armed, Narev would be a swift executioner. With all his strength, Richard lunged at the man's legs. Brother Narev toppled back onto the wet floor. Richard, his middle wrenched in torture, threw himself atop Narev's legs to hold him down. Bony fingers clawed at Richard's face, trying to gouge his eyes. Richard turned his head away. With fierce effort, he clutched at the heavy robes, dragging himself up the man's body, ignoring the blows to his face as he did so. He seized Brother Narev by the throat. Brother Narev's bony fingers closed savagely around Richard's throat. Both men growled with the effort of trying to strangle each other to death. Richard twisted his head, trying to prevent Narev from getting a death grip, while at the same time trying to get his own thumbs over Narev's windpipe so he could choke off his air. Narev tried to roll to throw Richard off. Richard spread his legs to make it harder for Narev to flip him over, and held tight as the man twisted and fought. He could feel his insides tearing. Richard had wielded a chisel and hammer for the order for months. He was stronger, but he was also losing a lot of blood, and that strength was fading. He squeezed with all his might. The fingers at his throat loosened a little. The man's eyes bulged as Richard finally managed to start to choke the life out of him. Bony hands thumped at Richard's shoulders. The hands suddenly and fiercely seized Richard by his hair. Narev freed a leg and brought his knee up into Richard's wound. The world went white with pain. Nikki woke, dazed, to the sound of a low, wicked laugh. She knew the voice. She knew the smell. Kadar Kardif. She heard a snapping, popping, hissing sound. A torch, she realized. He whipped it around in front of her face, so close she could feel the terrible heat against her flesh. Burning pitch dripped off, falling on her leg. Nikki screamed in pain as the pitch burned into the flesh of her thigh.
"What goes around comes around," Kadar said in her ear.
"I don't care what you do to me," Nikki cried in rage. "I'm glad I burned you. I'm glad you've had to beg."
"Oh, you'll be begging too before long. You may not think so, but you'll be surprised what fire makes a person do. You will yet know what it was like. You will yet beg."
With all her might, Nikki struggled against him. She could undo the spell if only Kaelin were closer. So near, but so far. The fire before her eyes sent terror scorching through her. She had only to snip the cord linking her to Kaelin. She could break the link. She didn't have to undo it in order to have her power back. Nikki could escape then. It would cost Kaelin her life. But Nikki would have her power, and she could escape the flames. But she would have to kill Kaelin to do it.
"Shall I burn your face first, Nikki? Your lovely face? Or maybe I should start with your legs? Which shall it be? You pick."
Nikki panted as she struggled, trying to back away from the heat on her flesh. The hissing torch waved in front of her face. She knew she deserved such a fate, but she was driven to wild panic by the fear of it. She didn't want to snip the link to kill Kaelin, but she didn't want to die this way. She didn't want her flesh to burn.
"I say we start at the bottom, so we can hear your screams."
Kadar brought the torch down and touched it to the hem of her dress. Nikki screamed as the black cloth caught flame. Such fear was a new sensation for her. For the first time since she was very small, she had something she cared about and didn't want to lose. Life. In a moment of stark terror, Nikki knew that no matter how much it was to hurt, no matter how frightening it was to be, she would not take Kaylin's life. Richard had given her the answer she had sought. She had taken too much already. In return for that lesson, she could not now violate it. Even though Kaylin, linked to Nikki, was to suffer the same fate, would die the same agonizing death, Nikki would not be the one who inflicted it. She would not take Kaylin's life from her. Kadar would be bringing their death, but Nikki would not. She would not kill Kaylin to save herself. Kadar Cardiff laughed as he watched her dress ignite. He held her in a firm grip. Nikki could not escape. Just then, a dark shape flew at her from midair, crashing into them both. They tumbled back, the air all around filled with fire. As Nikki rolled, it put the flaming dress out in the water. The one who had crashed into them was just getting up, shaking her head as if to clear it. Nikki recognized her. It was the moored Sith, Kara. Kadar sat up, saw the woman, and lunged at her with the torch. Nikki threw herself at Kadar, grabbing the torch in both hands as she pushed it into the big man's face. The pitch splashed against his mask of rags. The cloth on his chest and around his head ignited with a loud whoosh. Kadar screamed as the flames burned into his already melted flesh. Nikki had heard that heat to previously burned flesh was worse than the first burning. By the sound of his screams, it appeared to be true. Nikki snatched Kara's hand as the woman was regaining her feet. "Hurry! I must get to Richard!" Outside the room where Kadar's shrieks fell to strangled whimpers as the flames suffocated him, Kara seized Nikki by the hair and held her a jeel inches from her face. "Give me one reason why I should trust you with Lord Rahl's life." Nikki gazed into Kara's eyes. "Because I saw his statue, and I understand now how wrong I've been. Have you ever been wrong, Kara? Really wrong? Can you ever understand what it's like to realize you've been unthinkingly serving evil and hurting good people? Can you understand that Richard has shown me there is something to live for?" Nikki found Richard lying on his back, unconscious, or at least close to it. His head was pillowed on a marble hand. Kaylin lay beside him, clinging to him, weeping as his life bled away. Nikki was shocked to see the bodies strewn on the floor around them. Sister Alessandra, Brother Neil, Brother Narev. She knew by the way Richard looked that there was precious little time, if it were not already too late. Nikki knelt beside Kaylin. The woman was in abject misery, hanging by the last threads of desperate hope over the black brink of despair. She had come all this way, wanting to be with him, willing to suffer any end to do so, and here he lay, the lifeblood draining out of the one she loved most in life, knowing it was by her hand. Nikki took Kaylin by her shoulders and gently pulled her back. Kaylin looked up in confusion, hatred, and hope. "Kaylin, I need to remove the spell from you if I'm to help him. There's not much time." "I don't trust you. Why would you help?" "Because I owe it to him, to both of you. You have brought nothing but suffering and—" Kara took Kaylin's arm. "Mother Confessor, you don't have to trust her. Trust me. I'm telling you that Nikki might be able to save him. I believe she will do her best. Please, let her do it. Why should I trust her with his last few minutes of his life? Please, let Nikki have the chance Lord Rahl once gave me." Kaylin searched Kara's eyes for a moment, then turned to Nikki. "I know what it's like to be where he is now. I've been there. I chose life. Now he must. What do I need to do?" "You and Richard have already done enough." Nikki took Kaylin's tear-stained face in her hands. "Just be still, and let me do this." The woman was shivering in misery. Her long hair was matted and dripping wet. She was covered in Richard's blood. She could do no more for him, and she knew it. Nicky had to. As Kaelin gazed into her eyes, Nicky reignited the connecting cord of magic, hoping that she had enough time. Kaelin went rigid with the shock of pain it caused. Nicky knew exactly how it felt because she felt the same pain. Milky light connected both women heart to heart. Its wavering glow grew to blinding brightness, taking the pain to a new level in intensity. Kaelin's mouth opened in a silent cry. Her green eyes widened with the torment flooding through them both as the root of magic embedded in every fiber of their two beings vibrated in response to the call of the light. Nicky placed her hands over her heart in that incandescent shaft of light and began to withdraw her power. Chapter 70 Richard pulled a shuddering breath as he opened his eyes. Somehow he was lying in a position that didn't hurt. He feared to move, lest the crushing pain return. How could that be? He'd been run through with a sword. The darkness around him was still and quiet. In the distance he could hear the sounds of battle raging on. The ground beneath him shuddered with some great impact. There were people around him. Bodies lay on the wet floor. He realized he was on a board, keeping him up out of the water. He was covered in a warm cloak. He could see the dark, hunched shapes of people huddled around in the little room. Under his fingers lay the hilt of the Sword of Truth. Because the storm of magic was calmed, he knew the sword was in its scabbard. He looked up, and through the openings between beams, through broken stone and splintered wood, and could see the rosy blush of dawn. "Kaelin," he whispered. Three figures in the room sprang up, as if stone had suddenly come to life. The closest leaned in. "I'm here." She took up his hand. With his other hand, he reluctantly probed for his wound. He couldn't find it. He felt no pain, only a lingering ache. Another figure leaned in. "Lord Rahl, are you awake?" "What happened?" "Oh, Richard, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I stabbed you. It was all my fault. I should have taken an instant to be sure before I did it. I'm so sorry." Richard frowned. "Kaelin, I let you win." Silence greeted him. "Richard," Kaelin finally said, "you don't have to try to ease my guilt. I know it's my fault. I ran you through with the sword." "No," Richard insisted, "I let you win." Kara patted his shoulder. "Of course you did, Lord Rahl. Of course you did." "No, really." When the third figure turned to him, Richard's fingers tightened around the hilt of his sword. "How do you feel?" Nicky asked in that silken voice he knew so well. "Did you remove the link to Kaelin?" Nicky raised her hand and made a scissors motion with two fingers. "Gone for good." Richard let out a breath. "Then I feel fine." He tried to sit up, but Nicky's hand restrained him.
"Richard, I can never ask your forgiveness, because I can never return what I stole from you. But I want you to know that I now understand how wrong I've been. My whole life I have been blind. I'm not making an excuse. It's just that I want you to know that you have restored my vision. In giving me the answer I sought, you gave me my life. You gave me a reason to want to live."
"And what did you see, Nicky?"
"Life. You sculpted it so big that even someone who had so blindly served evil, as I had done, could see it. You must no longer prove yourself to me. Now it is for me, and those here you have inspired, to prove ourselves to you.
You and they have already begun, or I would not be alive."
"So, you are a sister of the light again?" Kaelin asked.
Nicky shook her head.
"No, I am Nicky. My ability as a sorceress is mine. It is who I am. My ability does not enslave me to others because they want it. It's my life.
It does not belong to anyone, except maybe to you two. You both have shown me the value of life, the rationale of freedom. If I am to serve beside anyone now, it will be beside others who hold dear the same values."
Richard placed his hand over Nicky's. "Thank you for saving my life. For a while there I thought I'd made a mistake when I let Kaelin run me through."
"Richard," Kaelin objected, "you don't have to try to assuage my guilt by saying that."
Nicky was gazing into his eyes even as she addressed Kaelin.
"He's not. He's telling you the truth. I saw him do it. He was forcing me to make a choice to save him so that I would have to break the spell holding you. I'm sorry you had to endure such a thing, Richard. I'd already made the choice the moment I saw your statue."
Richard tried to sit up again. Nicky restrained him again.
"It's going to take time for you to recover fully. You are still suffering the lingering effects of the injury. Just because you are alive, that doesn't mean it won't take some time before you are completely recovered. You have gone through a formidable ordeal. You lost a lot of blood. You will need to rebuild your strength. You could yet die if you don't go easy."
"All right," Richard conceded. He sat up carefully with Kaelin's help.
"I'll keep your words in mind, but I still have to get up there."
He turned to Kaelin. "By the way, what are you doing all the way down here? How did you know where I was? What's happening to the north in the new world?"
"We'll talk about all that later," she said. "I had to be with you. I decided that it was my life, and I wanted to be with you. You were right about the war in the new world. It took me a long time to come to understand that. I finally did. I came to be with you because that was all that was left for me."
He looked to Kara. "And you?"
"I always wanted to see the world."
Richard smirked as he rose with the help of Kaelin and Kara both. He felt lightheaded, but was joyful to trade that for the way he had been before. Kaelin handed him his sword. He slipped the baldric over his head, laying the leather across his shoulder and the scabbard at his hip. Knowing the weapon a little more intimately now, he had a new respect for it.
"I can't tell you how happy I am to return it to you," Kaelin said. She smiled sheepishly. "Like this, I mean."
Farther down the hall, Camille was anxiously waiting in the darkness, pierced by only a couple of candles. There were a number of people with him. Richard didn't know any of the people except Camille. He put a hand to the grinning young man's shoulder.
"Camille, good to see you."
"Richard, I saw it. I saw the statue."
His smile faded.
"I'm sorry it was destroyed."
"It was only a piece of stone. It was the ideas it represented that were its true beauty."
People in the dim hallway nodded. Richard saw then the woman with the wounded leg. He smiled at her. She returned a kiss on the end of her fingers to his forehead.
"Bless you for your bravery in carving that statue," she said. "We are all joyful to know you survived the night, Richard."
He thanked them all for their concern. The ground shook again.
"What is that?" Richard asked.
"The walls," one of the men said. "The people are pulling down the walls with those carvings of death on them."
Even as some people were pulling down the walls, others were still engaged in pitched battle. Richard could see in the faint light of dawn the fighting on the distant hillsides. It appeared that many people were not happy about the ideas Richard's statue had represented. There were those who feared freedom and preferred the numb existence of not having to think for themselves. The palace grounds, though, were in secure hands. The fires of liberty were spreading outward, igniting a conflagration of change. In the plaza, the semicircle of walls and all the columns but one still stood. It felt somehow different here. This was the place where the people had seen the statue and had chosen life. They weren't destroying this part of the palace. Richard dragged his boot through the marble dust.
In the center of the plaza, the layer of white dust was all that remained. Every precious fragment had been saved as a reminder. From out in the grounds where several men were gathered, Victor spotted Richard, Camille, and Nicky, who he knew. He called out as he and Ishak came running.
"Richard!"
Victor raced up the steps.
"Richard!"
Richard had Kara under one arm and Camille under the other, supporting him. He didn't have the strength to shout, so he simply waited until the two men were close, both panting from their run.
"Richard, we're winning,"
Victor said as he pointed at the hills.
"All those officials gone, and we—"
The blacksmith went silent as his eyes fell on Kalin. Ishak, too, stared at her, then swept his red hat off his head. Victor's mouth labored a moment before words finally worked their way out. His hand, usually so expressive, simply pointed at her as if she could not be real flesh.
"You," he said to Kalin, "you are Richard's love."
Kalin smiled. "How do you know that?"
"I saw the statue."
In the dawn light, Richard could see her face go red. "It didn't look exactly like me," she protested graciously.
"Not the way it looked, but the character. You have that quality."
Kalin smiled, pleased by his words. "Victor, Ishak, this is Kalin, my wife." Both men blinked dumbly and looked as one to Nicky.
"As you know," Nicky said, "I am not a very good person. I am a sorceress. I used my power to force Richard to come here with me. Richard has shown me, along with many other people, the nobility of life."
"Then you're the one who saved his life?"
Victor asked.
"Camille told us you were hurt, Richard," Ishak said, "and that a sorceress was healing you."
"Nicky healed me,"
Richard confirmed. Victor gestured expansively at last.
"Well, I guess that has to count for something, saving Richard Cipher."
"Richard Rall," Richard said. Victor's rolling laugh rumbled up from deep inside.
"Right. This day we are all Richard Rall."
Nicky leaned in.
"It really is Richard Rall, Mr. Casella."
"Richard Rall," Kalin said, adding her nod.
"Lord Rall," Kara said in ill humor. "Show the proper respect to the Seeker of Truth, the Master of the Daharan Empire, War Wizard, and the husband to the Mother Confessor herself."
Kara lifted her hand in graceful, regal introduction.
"Lord Rall."
Richard shrugged. He lifted the gleaming silver-wound hilt of his sword, showing them the word Truth in gold, and then let it drop back into its scabbard.
"What a beauty!" Camille shouted.
Victor and Ishak both blinked again, and then dropped to a knee. They bowed their heads deeply. Richard rolled his eyes.
"Will you two stop it?"
He shot Kara a scowl. Victor peered up cautiously.
"But we never knew. I'm sorry. You're not angry I made fun of you."
"Victor, it's me, Richard. How many times have we eaten your lardo together?"
"Lardo?" Kalin asked. "You know how to make lardo, Victor?" Victor rose up, a grin growing across his face as he peered at her.
"You know of lardo?"
"Of course. The men who used to come to work on the white marble at the Confessor's Palace used to eat lardo they made themselves in big marble tubs. I used to sit and eat it with them when I was little. They used to say I would grow up to wear the white dress of the Mother Confessor one day because I ate their lardo and would grow strong from it."
Victor thumped his chest with a big thumb.
"I make lardo in marble tubs, too."
"Do you let it age for a year?" Kalin asked.
"You have to let proper lardo age for a year."
"Of course a year. I make only proper lardo."
Kalin gave him her most beautiful green-eyed smile.
"I would love to taste it sometime."
Victor draped his massive arm around Kalin's shoulders.
Come, Richard's wife, I will give you a taste of my lardo.
Kara, a dark look on her face, put a hand to the blacksmith's chest to stop him. She lifted his arm from Caelan's shoulders.
No one but Lord Raal touches the Mother Confessor.
Victor gave Kara a quizzical look.
Have you ever had lardo?
No.
Victor slapped Kara in the back as he laughed. Come, then! I will give you lardo, too. Then you will see anyone who eats lardo with me is my friend for life.
Caelan took Camille's place under one of Richard's arms, Victor under the other, and they made their way across newly free ground up to the blacksmith's shop to have some lardo. Chapter 71 Verna pulled the candle close. She warmed her hands over it a moment, then laid the journey book on the table. The sounds of the army camp outside her small tent were by now so familiar she almost didn't hear them. It was a cold Daharan winter night, but at least they and all the people they had helped were safely over the mountains. Verna understood their quiet anxiety. It was a new and mysterious place, Dahara, a land once only a source of nightmares. At least they were safe for the time being. In the distance, the wolves' long plaintive howls echoed through the frigid mountains, off the moonlit snow blanketing the seemingly endless, desolate, colossal slopes. It was the proper phase of the moon, even if it was the moon in a new land, a strange and unknown land. Verna had checked for months, but there was never a message. She didn't really expect one, since Caelan had thrown Anne's twinned journey book in the fire. But still, it was a journey book, an ancient thing of magic, and Anne was a resourceful woman. It didn't hurt to look. Verna opened the little book with no real hope. There on the first page was a message. All it said was, Verna, I am waiting, if you are there. Verna drew the stylus from the spine and immediately began writing, Prelate, you have been able to fix the damaged journey book. That's wonderful. Where are you? Are you well? Have you found Nathan? Verna waited. Shortly the reply began to appear. Verna, I am well. I was able to restore the journey book with the help of some people. Strange people. But the important part is that it is restored, for the most part. I am still searching for the prophet. I have some good clues on Nathan's whereabouts, and I am looking into them. But how are you, Verna? How goes the war? Warren? Caelan? Is Zed giving you much trouble? That man can try the patience of stone. Have you had word of Richard? Verna stared at words on the page. A tear fell near Warren's name. She picked up the stylus once more and slowly began her reply. Oh, Prelate, some terrible things have happened. I am sorry, Verna, came the reply. Verna, I am here. I am going nowhere for the night. Take all the time you need. Tell me what happened. Tell me how you are, first. I worry so for you, Verna. I love you like a daughter. You know I do. Verna nodded to the book. She did know it. And I love you too, Prelate, Verna began. I fear my heart is broken. Caelan stood silently beside him in the warm midday breeze, as Richard looked out over the river at the city beyond. The city was peaceful now. Battle had raged for weeks, various factions struggling for power, lusting to be the new local incarnation of the Order, each faction swearing that they had the best interest of the people at heart, each promising that they would be compassionate in their rule, each pledging that life would be easier under their mandate, because they would see to it that everyone of means contributed to the common good. After decades of such altruistic tyranny, decay and death had been the only product of the business of the common good. Despite graveyards full of evidence and a people left impoverished, these aspirants to power offered only more of the same, and yet many still believed them simply because they uttered such good intentions. While a great number of brothers and officials had been killed, some had escaped. Some of those who had not fled thought to take advantage of the confusion and establish control, thinking they could rein in the hunger for freedom, the ideas loosed, and put things back to the way they were. The free people of Al-Turang, their numbers growing daily, eradicated each of these factions as they emerged from under their rocks. Nikki had been no small aid in the bloody battles. She knew the methods of such people, where they went to ground, and pounced on them like a wolf on vermin. The forces lusting to oversee the welfare and betterment of mankind came to greatly fear that which they had in fact created, death's mistress. There was no telling yet if freedom's flame, now ignited, would spread through the old world. It was still a very small flame in a vast and dark place, but Richard knew that such a flame burned brightly. To the north, matters were not nearly so auspicious. With Nikki's magic withdrawn, Richard supposed that the Daharans would know where he was and send him messages. Kara was immensely relieved to be able to sense his location again through her bond. He had listened quietly as Kaelin and Kara had told him all the details of the war and how they had sent the people of Adendril on a long and difficult journey to Dahara before Jagang could march into the city in the spring. It would give them heart to know that Lord Rahl had struck a mighty blow against the old world, to know that the Mother Confessor was with him, and that they were well. A number of men had requested the job of carrying that invaluable news north. Soon the Daharan Empire and the people they were protecting, who had fled their homes, would know of the victory to the south. The messengers would actually be carrying a more precious commodity than that news. They would, in reality, be carrying hope. Richard had also sent his grandfather the same word. Richard could hardly believe that Warren, his friend, was gone. The terrible anguish, he knew, would be slow to fade. Richard had sent one other thing north. Nikki had told him of Brother Narev's importance to Emperor Jagang, of their long history together, and of their shared vision of the future of mankind. In the spring, when Jagang finally, triumphantly, rode in to seize the Confessor's palace, waiting for him there, before his empty victory, would be his mentor's head on a pike, topped by his creased brown cap. Nikki had woven a spell around it, to preserve it, to keep scavengers away. Richard wanted to be sure that when Jagang finally saw it, he would not mistake who it was. In the teeming city of Al-Turang, peace had returned, along with freedom. Life had returned. People had begun to open new businesses. In a matter of weeks, there was already a variety of bread available. New enterprises were starting every day. Ishak was making a fortune hauling goods, but already had competitors vying for the business. Nabi had gone to work for him. Ishak had begged Richard to come work for him when he was strong enough. Richard had only laughed. Favel, the charcoal maker, had beseeched Ishak to ask Richard to come to visit and have dinner with him and his family. Favel had bought a cart, and his sons now delivered charcoal. Richard leaned with his forearms on the railing at the edge of the pier and gazed down over the edge to the swirling water below, as if trying to divine what the future held. The piers out into the river, and the walkway atop them, along with the plaza, were about all that remained of the palace. Richard had seen to it that the spell forms were removed from the tops of the columns around the grounds and had Prisca melt them down. Richard had regained most of his strength. Kaelin was strong and as beautiful as he remembered her. She had changed, though. Her face had grown more mature in the year they had been apart. When he gazed at her, he hungered for a piece of marble and his chisels so he could carve her face in stone. Flesh in stone. He turned and looked back along the pier toward the plaza, with its semicircle of columns behind it. The fallen column had been restored. The plaza had been renamed Liberty Square, Victor's idea. Richard asked if it shouldn't be called Liberty Circle, since it was round and not square. Victor thought it sounded better as Liberty Square, so Richard called it Liberty Square. After all, The first man to declare himself free there had been Victor. Kaelin gazed with him back toward the plaza. "What do you think?" Richard asked her. She shook her head, looking at best a little uneasy. "I don't know, Richard. It just seems so strange to see it so big, so white. You don't like it?" She quickly put a hand on his arm to dispel the notion. "No, it isn't that. It's just that it's so..." Her uncertain gaze returned down the pier. "Big." The center of the plaza, where the statue Richard had carved had briefly stood, now held a towering marble statue being worked on by a number of stone carvers who used to work at the site carving misery and death. Camille was down there, learning the craft of stone carving from masters. His education started with a broom. Richard had hired the carvers. With the fortune he had made helping the order build its palace, he could easily afford it. The carvers were glad for such work, to exchange value for value. The expert carvers were working on scaling up the small statue of Spirit, which Richard had carved for Kaelin, way back in their mountain home when she needed to witness vitality, courage, and indomitable spirit. It emerged anew in the best white Cavatura marble. The bronze ring of the sundial had survived intact and was being added to the piece. The statue rising in the center would cast its shadow on the curved dial plane. The words so many had touched that day would be there for all to see now. Kaelin had been enthusiastic about the concept, but had spent so many months with the carving Richard had done that it was disorienting for her to see it on such a massive scale. She was eager for the day when the carvers were finished scaling it up, and she could have her own statue of spirit back. "I hope you don't mind sharing it with the world," he said. Kaelin smiled wistfully. "No, not at all." "Everyone loves it," he assured her. Her wonderful lilting laugh drifted out across the warm afternoon air. "I'll just have to get used to you showing people my body and soul." Together they watched as the carvers working on the flowing robes checked their work with calipers against the statue Richard had carved, and the reference points from wooden braces used to scale up the work. Kaelin rubbed his lower back. "How are you feeling?"
"I'm fine. Now that you're with me, I couldn't feel better."
Kaelin laughed then. "As long as I don't run you through?" Richard's laugh fell in easily with hers. "You know, when we tell our children how their mother ran their father through with a sword, it's going to look pretty bad for you."
"Are we going to have children, Richard?"
"Yes, we are."
"Then I'll risk the tale."
As the warm breeze ruffled her hair, he kissed her brow. Glancing along the line of trees, their leaves shimmering in the sunlight, Richard watched birds cavort above the riverbank, sweep into a group, and then soar together up over the semicircle of white marble columns standing in the expanse of green grass. Kaelin leaned contentedly against his shoulder as they watched men filled with pride, smiling while they worked on the statue standing before those columns. In Alto Rang, there was a new spirit. In the former heart of the order beat freedom. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Faith of the Fallen by Terry Goodkind. Copyright 2000 by Terry Goodkind. Read by John Kenneth. Performance copyright 2000 by Brilliance Corporation. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Corporation, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.